You're listening to The Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Right off the bat, I'd like to ask somebody out there who's listening to satellite to call WWCR at this number. Area code 615-255-1377. That's 615-255-1377. One more time. Area code 615-255-1377. 1377. Tell them to wake up the incompetent jerk that's sleeping on the board and get this program on shortwave radio. Would you please do that for us? Whoever takes that responsibility, we thank you in advance. Albany, New York. Today, ladies and gentlemen, a gunman took quite a few students hostage. When he was finally captured, it was discovered that he had been telling the students, the hostages, that he had been the victim of a mind control operation, had been implanted with a microchip, and was being controlled from outside sources. We'll keep you advised on The Hour of the Time. Well, tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be talking to... Well, congratulations, WWCR finally woke up from their nap and did something to get this program on the air. I wonder where they find their night people. Probably down in the ditch somewhere. Really getting tired of this. We pay for this airtime. We're here. We're on satellite. We're doing our job. And down at WWCR, they're down in the basement drinking wine or something. I don't know what the world they're doing. But they're certainly not doing their job. And that's going to stop. One way or the other, it's going to stop. See, I had mercy on them the other night. I did not call management. I thought maybe our subtle hints would have hit the mark. But it looks like it didn't. Looks like we can't be nice. Looks like we're going to have to demand that management take some action in order to get the night shift at WWCR to do their job. It's unfortunate that that's the way we have to do our business. But if that's the way we have to do it, folks, that's exactly the way we will do it. And I know that many of you out there tune into your radio and you're waiting for us to come on the air. And you're hearing USA Radio News in the time that we're paying for. So I think I'll also send a bill to USA Radio News. And I think I'll also refuse to pay WWCR for 2 hours of airtime. And they, in turn, can turn around and take it out of the paycheck of whoever the dummy is that's on the board that's supposed to be working tonight. What a shame. This doesn't happen in Japan. I can guarantee you, folks, this does not happen in Japan. Don't go away. I'll be right back with our special guest. BTP is here tonight. The man who put together, wrote, edited, and published Goodbye April 15th, the book that many of you have been raving about, and a lot of you have never seen, You've heard us discuss it on this broadcast, and you've been procrastinating. Well, after this night and the next two nights, I think you'll probably be ordering your copy, too.
All of a sudden, in the middle of the night, there's a loud knock on your door.
Hey, honey. Something's not right.
Throw out your arms. Please don't fall past through. We're here for the government. We're here to help you.
And I'm from the IRS with a power to tax. Did you die complain? Stay on the back.
Get out of this house. Surrender your taxes. Give me your gold. You better obey if you want to come home. That's what you said and do what you're told.
Hillary Salama, Reno Janet Dyke, reading the words of General Albert Pike, demonic founder of the Ku Klux Klan, engineer of the Masonic Master Plan. Pike said Lucifer is God across this land, and Clinton saying hit the mark with your right hand. While we're all dancing to the drums of uproar's right, Clinton's preparing it for another huge hike. Order out of chaos, depression, inflation, creates a panic and rape the nation.
Order.
Crisis creation. Incite black and white, program education. Clinton's preparing it for another huge hike. Order out of chaos, depression, inflation, creates a panic and rape the nation.
Order.
Crisis creation. Incite black and white, program education.
Well, folks, welcome to the Hour of the Time. We're here tonight with Mr. Party, that is Boston Tea Party. Welcome to the Hour of the Time.
Thank you, Bill. Greetings to all the listeners out there.
Let's just start with your background. I mean, who is Boston Tea Party? Where'd you come from? How'd all this start?
Well, most writers of books like these had horror stories of their own. They're usually business people, married couples, had their own raids, seizures, that sort of thing. I was a young man when I wrote this book. I was back in 1989, a college friend of mine, was asking me information on the subject. And we didn't know much in 89, certainly not as much as we know now. And his wife was an accountant, and he said, you know, you ought to put this down into a report. You really can't tell my wife anything. She has to read it, or else it's not true. So I did that, and it was 40 pages, and then it grew to 100 pages, and then a year and a half after he asked me, it had grown to 200 pages, and at that time I had to decide whether or not another book like this was necessary, and I thought it was. So I prayed about it and talked to my folks about it, and they backed me. Spring of 91, got a new computer system, Windows, all the desktop publishing software I needed, and got to work for a year and a half. The book came out November 92.
But how did you know that anything was wrong? I mean, what got you started on the knowledge that it takes to be able to even know that you can look in and find this information, much less write it in a book? Something must have got you fired up to make you look in the first place. What was that?
Yeah, that's true. When I was a young man, I was operating a business that was heavily regulated in its industry. And I was 18 to 20 when I had that business. Got used to regulators coming out of the woodwork, demanding paperwork at any time of the night or day. They could dictate how you ran your business, who you could hire. So I was kind of tweaked in my personality against the government for the first time. I was pretty naive before that. And then right about that same time, during that mindset, a friend gave me a copy of Erwin Schiff's How Anyone Can Stop Paying Income Tax. That was back in 1981, I think. And those two things put together just changed my outlook on this subject. So the following years, from 81 to 89, whenever I'd run across a book like this, such as Cooley's or Lynn Johnston's or anything by Irwin Schiff or Marvin Larson, I'd pick it up. So I had quite a bit of a library that just kept my interest and my outrage going over those years.
And so it started out as just a report that somebody had asked for. What prompted the demand for this report? Were you trying to tell people what you'd learned, and they said, prove it to me or something like that?
Yeah, basically one friend said, hey, write something down for me. Write something down for my wife. And I had been writing quotations and short little essays for my own enjoyment before then, so I was writing-oriented. And the 40-page report grew into 200 pages a year and a half later, and then I decided to get serious. I looked at what was out there, and the books that had good information generally were fairly non-professional, hard to read, and then the books that were easier to read didn't have that much information. So I wanted to come out with a book that had good information, timely, up-to-date facts, conclusions in a professional format.
Well, I must say that you certainly accomplished the goal that you set out for yourself, because April 15th, along with Vultures and Eagles Clothing, are the two only books that we recommend that people read. And for years, I wouldn't recommend anything to anyone because there were so many ways that people could get caught up in just doing what somebody else said to do without checking it themselves, and the research really wasn't there, and people were getting in trouble. So tell us, what did you find? What was the first thing that you discovered when you began looking in to the reality of the law and the income tax and these regulating agencies? What was the first thing that you found that really opened your eyes and said, "Oh my God, I got to look more at this"?
I'd have to say that was finding a copy of Alan Stang's Tax Scam. I don't know if you've heard of that or read of it, but it was based on the 1956 and 57 report by the federal government about the federal government's jurisdiction within the states, problems overlapping jurisdictions between the states and the feds, and before that, the whole untaxed concept was really based on constitutional law rights, and that had never worked in the courts. But once Tax Scam came out and the federal government themselves admitted that they did not have legislative jurisdiction within the states, I saw that there was much more to this than everyone had been pretty much harping on for the last 20 years. Constitutional rights mean nothing in federal courts. They haven't for quite a while.
Well, that's correct, but that's mainly because we're, and that's a completely different subject, but it, in a way it's a part of this, but that's because of the, and we might as well touch on it, it's because of the implementation by executive order of the Emergency Powers Act and the Trading with the Enemies Act, that actually these two acts were created for World War One.
Right.
And when the government had to declare bankruptcy in the 1930s, they had to be able to control the economy, they thought. I mean, in the way that they had planned to steal America, they had to have extraordinary powers to be able to get away with it. So they implemented these two acts, the Emergency Powers Act and the Trading with the Enemies Act, by executive order. And Roosevelt did that. And since then, the Constitution has actually not been enforced, has it?
No, it hasn't.
So you took and you began to build on this information, this initial research that you did. And why don't you just tell us what transpired from that point on, what you discovered, what it means. And we've got tonight and two more nights of this, folks, so you're not going to hear it all tonight. And what you're probably going to get out of tonight is a lot of groundwork and basic stuff that Mr. Party will build on tomorrow night and Friday.
That's right. Basically, what we've discovered, and I include myself with Mitch Modaleski and other authors. Mitch Modaleski wrote The Federal Zone. What we discovered is that in law, the term United States has up to three different meanings. Generally, when it's talked about in the federal codes, it only means the federal government and its territories, the United States being a singular noun, not a collective noun as it used to be referred to. So, well, what's significant about that? Well, you've got to read federal code and regulations with the understanding that it's usually just talking about the federal government, their own turf. Congress basically works for the 50 states some of the time and for Washington, D.C. most of the time. So you've got to understand that distinction. Why that's important is that the Bill of Rights does not apply within federal territory. It never has. The Constitution itself, which created the federal government, spelled out its job description, its limitations of power, said that Congress had exclusive legislative powers in all cases whatsoever within this newly created district. So within the so-called federal zone, Washington, D.C., national parks, national forests, military bases, any of the island protectorates or trusts, such as Puerto Rico or Marianas Islands, inside the federal zone, you're in a different country. You have no more Fourth Amendment right or Fifth Amendment right, naturally, than you do if you go into Mexico. So we didn't understand that. When the feds would get us to admit that we live in the, quote, United States, we thought we were saying, well, we're Americans. We live in the USA. When the feds got us to claim that we were U.S. citizens, we thought we were just saying we're American citizens. We didn't understand these fine technical distinctions in law, which isn't really surprising. Americans aren't detail, legalistic-minded people. They're ambitious, hardworking, inventive. And this subtle, cowardly wordplay has escaped us until recently. So we've pretty much caught them at their own grand game. Now we're trying to perfect our procedure in extricating ourselves from the tyranny and enslavement that they've tricked us into.
In other words, the American people have fallen for the old scam that the words have the same meaning in government and in the law that they have in the usage by the average person in their everyday life, and that just isn't true, is it?
Not at all. It never has been true in law.
Let me read this to you, ladies and gentlemen, so you'll understand exactly what we're talking about. In the United States Constitution, or the Constitution for the United States of America, as it should be rightly called, in Article 1, Section 8, it lays down the powers that are granted to the United States federal government. And when they talk about United States in these modern days, that's exactly what they're talking about. They're not talking about the states. They're not talking about the union of the several states. They're talking about the federal government, which exists within the 10 miles square district called the District of Columbia. And there's one specific place here that is extremely important. And it says, and I quote, "To exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such district, not exceeding 10 miles square, as may by cession of particular states and the acceptance of Congress become the seat of the government of the United States, and to exercise like authority over all places purchased by the consent of the legislature of the state in which the same shall be, for the erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings," and then it goes on to make all laws, and "which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers and all other powers vested by this Constitution in the government of the United States or in any department or office thereof." Basically, what this says is that there's two governments. One is a government for the mutual benefit and protection of the several sovereign states, and the other one is a more or less dictatorial government which only has power over this 10 square miles and any other land that may be ceded and deeded by the states to this federal government, and of course places like Puerto Rico and the United States Virgin Islands and other territories that are held. And specifically, when you're reading in the United States Code where it says that United States citizens have to do this, this, or that, what are they talking about?
Well, they're talking about Americans who were born in federal territory or Americans that have moved to federal territory somehow have claimed U.S. citizenship. And what that means is federal citizenship. versus being a citizen of one of the states.
And they have no constitutional protection whatsoever, because the Constitution says that Congress shall legislate for them in all cases whatsoever.
That's true. They couldn't have a distinct non jurisdiction of rights there, because it, let's say when all this started out, that within the federal zone, say in 1890, you walked in and they said you have no constitutional rights, people would go, well, wait a minute, this is America. What Congress did was extend to the early Americans at that time full Bill of Rights, which they could do within the federal zone. Gradually over the past 200 and something years, they've been whittling away at that so as not to excite the public, so as not to educate the public that there was ever a different citizenship. So they've done that very gradually. There was a case last year. I was skiing, and I happened to read in the little local newspaper of Jackson, Wyoming, Supreme Court briefs. Case came down. A guy was drunk driving in Yosemite National Park, got pulled over, ticketed. He goes to trial. He didn't get a jury. He just had a court trial. Was found guilty. Subsequently, he sued the federal government for denying him his constitutional right to a jury trial. Sounds reasonable, right? Well, the Supreme Court came back, 9-0 unanimous decision, and it said this: you do not have the right to a constitutional jury trial while committing crimes on federal property, territory. And he was in a national park. So what they're saying is what the Constitution has said all along, is that the Bill of Rights does not apply except as the Hooven case in 1945, where Congress has made those rights applicable. They can grant rights or so-called privileges, and then they can take them away. So we've got a unanimous case from last year that just exemplifies this whole concept.
And to clear that up a little bit, and so that you'll understand it, the 14th Article and Amendment to the Constitution says this, and listen very carefully, folks: all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. So you see, there's clearly two different citizenships here. There's citizens of states and there's citizens of United States. And what the 14th Article and Amendment did was say that citizens of the United States are also subject to the same rights given to citizens of the several states. It says, no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States. Now, this was done to give the slaves who were not citizens of any state and therefore were not protected by the Constitution rights and privileges granted by the United States government after the United States government had declared them free. And basically, this 14th Article and Amendment, for anyone who can read and understand, clearly spells out two different governments, two different citizens, and two different rights under the law.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the one, the citizens of the several states, are endowed with natural rights, or creator-endowed rights, as some people would say. The citizens of the United States are privileged citizens and are subject to the entire dictatorship of the Congress under all circumstances and in every incident.
That's right. Some people might be thinking, well, this is just semantics. This is just a word game. You know, prove it's true. Well, if you've got my book out there, Goodbye April 15th by Boston Tea Party, look on page 616. That's page 16 of chapter 6. I'm quoting from 26 Code of Federal Regulations 1.1-1C. Who is a citizen? It says, every person born or naturalized in the United States and subject to its jurisdiction is a citizen. They didn't say subject to their jurisdiction, the collective United States, meaning the 50 states, the whole country. They're talking about the United States, singular noun, subject to its jurisdiction. Finding this section in the Code of Federal Regulations, Title 26, is really one thing that showed the difference, clear and print. Usually when the feds talk about the United States and jurisdiction, who's subject to it, they say, and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. It's a tricky way of avoiding which United States they're talking about.
And also you'll find that in each law that's passed, if the definition of any word changes in respect to the legal definition that's accepted in the law and in the legal dictionaries that apply, the new definition must be stated and spelled out and defined in that legislation. And these are things that you have to be very careful of, because you'll find that you'll be reading a law that's just been passed that says that citizens of the state are subject to this law, and then you go and you find the definition of state, and it says the Federal District of Columbia, right. Puerto Rico, the United States Virgin Islands, and so it's another tricky way to make people believe through the color of law that they're subject to a law that does not pertain to them whatsoever.
Sure.
So these are important things that you have to understand before that you can really understand how all of these other items of research pertain to the education of the average citizen in respect to things like the income tax, the FCC, the FAA, all of these different agencies that regulate and enforce and make us do things that, in fact, when you study the law and the powers that these agencies have, they have very little or no authority whatsoever, and specifically none over the state citizens when people actually enjoy that status.
True. Let me say something about reading law in particular. Lawyers go to school not just to learn the law, but to achieve a certain mindset, a way of looking at things, a legalistic type of mind. Law is written as its own little world within itself, just like the rules to a card game or a football game. That's a little insular planet with its own rules. You can't take anything you've learned or you understand or you assume on the outside of that world and translate it or import it into the legal world. If a section of code is talking about something, it has its definition spelled out, and that's the way the game is played. It can say black is white and white is black and right is wrong and wrong is right. So you have to first, if you're studying the law, look at the definitions, because everything stems from that.
And in making all this available to everybody, you've certainly established your position as someone who's out in front leading and is not kowtowing or bowing down to this phony authority under the color of law. And don't go away, folks. We'll be right back after this short pause. The Hour of the Time, ladies and gentlemen, is brought to you by Swiss America Trading. Now, over the, it's been 2 years and almost 8 months now that we've been broadcasting, and Swiss America Trading has been our sponsor for a good portion of that time. I've become good friends with Craig Smith and Gene Miller and many of the other people down there, and I can tell you without any shadow of a doubt that they understand the situation that we find ourselves in today. They care about the message of this broadcast. They know what real money is. Our efforts to educate you, most of the people who listen to this broadcast are awake, they're real people, and they're beginning to become active to help regain our Republican form of government as guaranteed in the Constitution. But what are you doing to make sure that you have some real money? How many of you are actually aware that the Constitution says, in very clear English, that no state shall tender in payment of debt anything other than gold or silver coin? How many of you are aware that in the United States Code, it specifically says that a dollar is a specific measurement of gold or silver coin? How many of you knew that? How many of you know that the United States Code clearly provides penalties for dealing in anything other than gold or silver coin, or anything other than what is defined in the law as a dollar? And that it calls these other currencies and these other phony monies counterfeit, and provides very stiff penalties. In fact, the penalty outlined in the laws of the United States of America for defacing the coinage of the realm are for debasing the dollar, ladies and gentlemen, is death. Yet, what are we dealing with? What do you have in your wallet? We call that money, that if you take it down to a bank and say, I want this much in gold or silver coin, what do you do when they laugh at you? Why is it that no one is prosecuted these clear violations of the law? And a clear subversion of what the Constitution of the United States of America says that money should be. How many of you in your states have checked to see if your state makes or tenders in payment of debt, gold or silver coin, or if they use funny money called Federal Reserve notes, or even worse yet, electronic transfer of funds that never existed, don't exist, and never will exist? I think you should look into that. In the meantime, you should be taking the steps to make sure that you have at least a portion of your assets in real money, ladies and gentlemen. Because unless you do, you're subject to the whims and wiles of an international marketplace over which you and over which America has no control whatsoever. It could come tumbling down tomorrow morning. And in all likelihood, it might. So please call our sponsors, Swiss America Trading. Tell them that you listen to the hour of the time. Tell them that William Cooper asked you to call and ask them how you can put part of your assets into real money and protect yourself against a financial collapse, which I believe with all my heart is just over the horizon. Call 1-800-289-2646, folks, and do it now. 1-800-289-2646. You'll be glad that you did. A great weight will come off your shoulders. You'll be able to look your loved ones in the eye and say, hey, come what may, we're going to be fine. 1-800-289-2646. You have their guarantee. They give you a buyback program. You have my personal guarantee. Do it. 1-800-289-2646 and do it now, folks. You know how you tend to procrastinate, as we all do.
Welcome to the new world order. Never in human history has so few taken so much from so many as America's Illuminati and their warlords of Wall Street and Washington. In just 8 years, these banksters and international government gangsters took it from the greatest creditor nation to the largest debtor nation on earth.
Our standard of living has dropped like a rock before.
Oh, yeah, and everybody talks about how wonderful the 80s were and what Ronald Reagan did for this country. Folks, anybody can do that. Gee, if I could go out tomorrow and borrow $2 billion just for my family and just slough the payment of that debt off on my children and grandchildren and their children and grandchildren. Yeah, I'd be a good boy, but I tell you, my wife would be telling you just what a good guy I am, too. But you see, it's not true. Somebody has to pay that back. And Ronald Reagan spent more money during his 8 years as president than all the administrations and all the presidents of the United States government in the entire cumulative history of this country. Oh, yeah, everybody had it good. Yeah, the government was spending money all over the place and putting money into circulation like it was going out of style. And yeah, old Rush Limbaugh and all the fools across this country keep saying just what a great guy Ronald Reagan was. Well, what's going to be the consequences of that, Mr. Party?
Well, there's a saying, as far as debt goes, it's always repaid, if not by the borrower, then by the lender. And what we haven't realized is that we've been the lenders through the monetization of debt through income taxes. And the federal government and their little drones that have enjoyed all this, they're not going to pay for it. We are. Probably through the debasement of the currency and people flocking to get rid of the old made dollar.
That's right. And isn't it a fact that what people believe they're paying as income tax, that they believe is supporting the government, and the government is using to pay employees and pave roads and all that, isn't it a fact that that just goes to pay the interest on the debt?
Oh, yeah. It doesn't even pay all the interest on the debt.
And that we're not paying any of the principal, just interest. Isn't that correct?
That's correct.
And what has been paying for the operation of the government has been tariffs, excise taxes, and import taxes. And with GATT and NAFTA, those are gone now.
Right.
So what's going to happen to these people sitting out there thinking that 55% of their income going to pay all of these taxes, and not just income tax, but all of the taxes? You're paying at least 55% of your income toward taxes. What's going to happen now?
Well, they're going to wake up one way or the other, either through their own education or they'll be educated sort of against their will.
And through the color of the law, though, aren't they going to have to raise the income taxes? And they're going to say it's because they have to make up for these tariffs and excises and import taxes that no longer apply because, gee, it's a free trade zone now.
Well, that's how the income tax was started. It was the wealthy people that were seen to be getting a free ride because they didn't pay any income tax. The only tax Americans paid before 1913 were on imported goods, basically. So it was looked at and propagandized as being unfair to the common man. Let's soak the rich, let's have an income tax program and shuffle the tax burden from the common man to the wealthy who has yet to pay his fair share. And we'll see a resurgence of that kind of rationale again.
Well, let's get back into your research there. What's the next?
Well, let's see, where were we? Talking about who is a citizen, ramifications of that. I'll tell you another thing that sort of clinched this for me, because I really went into this whole book project with quite a bit of skepticism. I wanted to believe these things I heard were true. I wanted to believe that, you know, yes, we've been defrauded and cheated, but it had to be proved to me. There's something I found in Title 28 USC, United States Code, Section 1746. It's talking about different versions of the penalty of perjury oath, the perjury juret. And it has two versions here. If what you're swearing to was executed without the United States, that means outside the United States, it says, I declare, blah, 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 under the penalty of perjury, under the laws of the United States of America, that the foregoing is true. And then down below, the second version, if executed within the United States, its territories, possessions, or commonwealths, I declare, verify, state, under penalty of perjury, that the foregoing is true and correct. What's different about the second one is the phrase, under the laws of the United States of America. That was included in the perjury jurat that was executed outside the United States. So obviously the United States is not the same in law. What they're talking about here is the United States of America. And these things are littered amongst the codes and the regulations. It's just taking a lot of people a couple of decades to find them. But we've pieced together and we've proved it to anybody that has a reasonably open mind.
So these guys are magicians with words.
Oh, yeah.
And so you might call them something like the Magi?
Indeed. I call them English majors from hell. I mean.
Yeah. Well, actually, in the vast halls of the shadowy lodge meetings where these people congregate, magi is appropriate. They practice the profession of creating illusions mm-hmm. and deceptions, and it works. And basically, in order to fool people, they're sort of wagging their left hand while they're doing something else with their right hand. And people have to understand the meaning of these words, how they're being tricked.
That's right.
They have to wake up to the fact that we've trusted these people for many years and we shouldn't have.
Orwell had a great quotation in 1984. Said, "The revolution will be complete when the language is perfect."
And, of course, you and I know what that means.
Yeah.
Okay. Where are you going to take us now? Everything, by the way, folks, for those of you who have Goodbye April 15th and Vultures and Eagles clothing, you know the vast amount of wealth of information and research that would take you years to perform is readily available for you in those two books. And we'll tell you how you can get a copy of Goodbye April 15th a little later. But in the meantime, take us to the next step. Where are we going now?
Okay, since we've covered basically the jurisdiction scam, the citizenship scam, how does this translate to all of us? How does it relate to us? Well, we all work for a living primarily, and we've been tricked that our wages are taxable. Wages are income. The courts have said so. Well, which wages are they talking about? Which income are they talking about? And if you've got the book, I'm in chapter 11 right now, page 2, where the code is talking about what are wages, what is an employer, what is an employee, and wages is remuneration for services performed by an employee. What's an employer? It's the person for whom the individual performs a service. Well, what's an employee? An employee includes an officer, employee, or elected official of the United States. What they're talking about, the word employee in law, in the tax code, means people that work for the feds, government employees, officers, elected officials of the government.
And that's the federal government.
That's right.
As defined in the Constitution, which exists within this 10-mile square of territory known as Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. our property that's been ceded and deeded to that government by the states.
Correct. Now, the feds have the right to tax their own employees. That was fought pretty vociferously by the federal judges, because there's a clause in the Constitution that says that their compensation cannot be diminished while they're in office. And when the first income tax was enacted in 1862, they fought it. It was Judge Taney who wrote a letter. It wasn't a court decision. It was just basically an opinion of his saying that, hey, you know, check the Constitution out on that. So the feds lost up until 1932 on this issue. It was hammered over and over again that the feds could not tax the federal judges. Their salary was inviolate. Well, what Congress did was wised up. They knew the federal judges would continue to attack this this idea. So what they did was they passed it was the 1932 Income Tax Act, which said judges taking office after June 6, 1932, will have their wages taxed. But those already in office before that date escape the taxation. So by accepting a federal judgeship, or as a another case which was before the Supreme Court years later said, if you accepted a promotion within the federal judiciary, went from a higher court, then your wages as a federal judge were taxed. So then they finally got around the last obstacle to taxing federal employees in general in 1932. Then in 1939, they had the Public Salary Wage Tax Act, And we've all been tricked that, hey, I'm an employee, just like I'm a U.S. citizen. We didn't know the difference because we didn't check it out.
So the important thing for people to understand is that an employee is someone who works for the federal United States government.
That's right.
Not somebody that works for mailboxes, etc., or works for Katie's Country Kitchen or something like that.
That's absolutely right. And we get tricked into this. We are signing W-4 forms, which is the Employee Withholding Allowance Certificate. Well, that's saying two things. It's saying, number one, I'm an employee, and two, I'm allowing withholding. And the Internal Revenue Code has a beautiful little provision for allowing voluntary withholding, whereas it normally wouldn't be obliged to.
Now, don't get us wrong, folks. We're not saying that you shouldn't pay taxes. We encourage and believe that everybody should pay legal and lawful taxes to which you are subject under the law.
Certainly.
And but we do not believe that anybody should have to pay taxes that they're not subject to under the law, or that they've been tricked into paying that they don't have to pay, or that they've been defrauded into paying.
That's right. All of this really is an example of tax avoidance. This is not tax evasion. The analogy that would make sense here is if you have two bridges going across a river, one is free and the other is a toll bridge, it's not against the law to take a free bridge. That's tax avoidance. Now, if there was one bridge and it was a toll bridge and you snuck across without paying, that's evasion. So this isn't semantics, and we're not wishing all this was true and trying to find a sneaky, wormy way around this. These things are in place in the law and the regulations for anybody that will research it and squeeze the truth out of it. And believe me, this stuff has to be squeezed.
Now, in a government up for and by the people, it's imperative that the people know and understand the law and understand the legal definition of terms under the law. And under the common law, it's specific that the only one who can claim the rights of an individual is that individual.
Mm-hmm.
And under the perverted law, if you hire a lawyer, you're actually giving your rights away, and you become declared legally incompetent.
That's
and
right.
In effect, you're awarded the court.
Exactly.
So, folks, it's important that you learn these things, and it's important that you understand that to take our country back, you have to get involved, and there's things that you have to do. And the biggest thing that you have to do is become educated as to the truth, not only of the law, but a lot of other things that have been happening.
That's right.
And the book that we're talking about, Goodbye April 15th, enables you to do this. It's a tremendous amount of research and education for anyone who thinks that they've been living in the real world but have really been dealing in fantasy land. Let me put it another way, folks. You're in Disneyland, and it's nighttime. The park's closed. Everybody else has gone home, but you're still in there, see?
Just trying to play the rides.
Yeah, and the rides aren't even going around, but you're having a good time thinking that everything is cool. So basically, that's the message, and then you've got to get that message one way or another. That's the purpose of this broadcast, is to wake people up.
Thank you. Well, we lost the country individually, person by person, and that's the only way we're going to get it back. Don't look to a president. Don't look to politics. Don't look for some miracle. They've gotten our power piece by piece from millions of us. And when we take it back from them piece by piece, they'll find that it's like water or sand just going through their fingers.
That's right. And the way that they've been able to do it, folks, is because we have abdicated our responsibility. We've said we're going to send these people to Washington. We're going to trust that they're going to do the right thing. And this is America. Nothing bad can happen here. And they're sitting in Washington, D.C. saying this: a nation, a world of people who will not use their intelligence are no better than animals who do not have intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Such people are beasts of burden and stakes on the table by choice and consent. And they're talking about us. What's next?
Well, let's see, how much time do we have? I don't want to get into anything that needs 20 or 30 minutes.
Well, you got about 5 minutes.
Okay.
And don't forget, we've got tomorrow and Friday night.
That's right.
And I'm going to give you much more of the show tomorrow and Friday night. But there's some things tonight that I think it was important that I clarify. Because we have a lot of listeners out there who, even though I've done many shows on these issues back in the early days of this broadcast, We haven't done it for a while, and we have a lot of people out there listening with their jaws dropped down to their chest. These guys are crazy, and this is the first time they've ever heard it. So,
right.
Go ahead.
Well, if we're not U.S. federal citizens, if we've only lived in our states, and we never meant to be tricked into federal citizenship and all its rules and waiving rights and all that sort of thing, what they call us in law, and this is a very calculated little term, it's called non-resident alien. That sounds like we're from another planet or from Brazil or Australia. It doesn't mean that at all. It means from the basis of what the code is written from, the jurisdiction, the federal government, from that basis, people who are not citizens or residents of that jurisdiction are just called non-resident aliens. So if you read the code with the understanding, the false understanding, that it means, you know, USA and the federal government has power across the whole country, well, you're going to read the term non-resident alien incorrectly. And that this little thing has escaped us for quite a while until we got back to the basics. That's what I would kind of like to sort of summarize this first night with you all, is go to the basics, go to the definitions, go to the fundamentals, look at things as what they really are, not what you thought them to be. And you'll see things quite a bit differently after that, and all this new information, which sounds kind of daunting at first, will begin to make more sense.
It's not as difficult as it sounds, folks. The law is really very simple, and it's based upon definitions. It's based upon specific statements that of what the law is, and it's based upon rulings, or what they call precedents, that courts have ruled on in the past, and all these things are easy to find. I think one of the most important things that you have to remember is words do not mean what you think they mean.
That's right.
And words have power, like Rush says. You know, Rush is right a lot of the times, and that's one of the times he's right, when he says that words have meaning and they have power. So these are the things that you have to pay attention to. You cannot just assume mm-hmm. that you're doing something right if you haven't actually checked. I mean, somebody told you had to have a Social Security number, so you went and got one.
Sure.
Somebody told you had to fill out a W-4 form, so you did. Somebody told you that your employer had the right to subtract taxes from your paycheck.
Right.
And the truth is, unless he is specifically designated and has a certain form making him a withholding agent of the United States government, he has no right under the law to mm-hmm. withhold taxes from your paycheck. In fact, he could be prosecuted under the criminal statutes for doing it.
Certainly, Tyler. Yeah, we've been obeying echoes of phantoms for about 70 years, and it's really time we woke up to it. I'll say one thing about reading the law, seeing it as it is. It's like those stereogram pictures that look like computerized confetti, and then you focus on it, and it's a 3D image that's contained inside. That's what this is like. The first time to do it takes quite a bit of work. You don't quite get it immediately. But once you do, it's something you can do over and over and over again. I can pick up a piece of federal code, and I can see what they were thinking when they wrote it. When you know how to read these things, and you've learned how to see it, you've learned how to focus the mental lens of your mind, you can do it over and over again, and it's a lot easier. So take it slow. Take my book slow, or any other information like this, at your own pace. And write me if you've got any questions. If something's unclear in the book or you don't understand the concept, let me know, because I want to make it clearer for you and also the readers of the next edition.
Well, I want to thank you for being our guest tonight. And, folks, he'll be back with us again tomorrow night, and he's going to be talking much more during the show tomorrow night and Friday night than he was tonight, because we've got over this little basic hurdle here that I had to make sure that you all understood out there. If you'd like to order a copy of Goodbye April 15th, and believe me, it's well worth it. If you don't really understand what we're talking about, if you don't really understand the law, if you have been confused about an awful lot of things in the past concerning the law and the United States government and the state government and your status and their status and how things happen and why a judge might say that the Constitution doesn't apply in his court, you need this book. If you'd like to have it sent $43, to the Intelligence Service, Post Office Box 1420, Sholo, Arizona, 85901. That's $43 to the Intelligence Service, Post Office Box 1420, Sholo, Arizona 85901. Make checks or money orders out to Annie, A-N-N-I-E. Don't put anything else on there, just Annie, A-N-N-I-E. Good night, folks.
Good night.
And God bless you all.
People, I think it's time we stop this running around. This world is going too fast and we'd like to slow it down. Don't let them talk you into doing what you don't want to. Just learn to say no and learn how to refuse. Cause you don't owe nobody nothing except...
Somebody out there, wake up the people at WWCR so that the program that follows ours can get on the air when it's supposed to be there.
The one person that you should never try to fool is you. You can make it to the top, but only you'll know when to reach. And I am not just talking, cause I practice what I preach. Maybe you don't do all the things you're supposed to. Your boss gives you a job you hate, but you smile, that's the rule. You see yourself playing the game and it's rubbing you wrong. Oh, you don't know how much more you'll take, how long can it go on? Well, you don't know nobody, nothing except God above. Go out and go after the things in life you love. Don't try to force it, it ain't going smooth. The one person that you should never try to fool is you. You can make it to the top, but only you'll know when to be. And I am not just talking, I practice what I preach. No, I am not just talking, cause I practice what I preach.